symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome to ARN. This is Paul Bromwell. As always, I'm joined by the Hall of Famer, the founder of the Four Horsemen, the creator of the Spine Buster, the 1A of tag team wrestling. He is my tag team partner, and as we learned last week, the man Dusty called a walk behind her. He's the enforcer. He's double A. He's ARN Anderson. ARN, how are you this week?
I'm walking behind, I guess.
You are not. You're out in front, and I'm the walk behind her. I'll tell you that right now, man. It is a privilege to be with you again this week. And before we jump into the show, because we're going to jump right in, there's a few upcoming dates that you and Brock, we touch on them every week, but I wanted to start the show this week. As this show airs on March 9th, you and Brock are going to be at the Richmond Galaxy Con March 15th, 16th, and 17th.
That's correct. It's going to be a huge show.
Yeah, man. GalaxyCon sounds massive. I mean, it's going to be you guys plus a lot of other stars. And is it just not wrestling too, right? It's actors and a lot
It's mostly all that, you know, entertainment. Okay. You know, it's actors. It's comic book people. It's very artists. You name it. You know, I'm going to have the ton of books there for whoever's going to want them. And live events like that, they get a chance to pop it open, look it over, and make a decision. And it's going to be a good 3 days. Brock and I have not done this type scenario in Richmond ever, so this is first.
So come on out, see him in Richmond. That's next weekend, the 15th, 16th, and 17th. And then in 2 weeks, they're going to be at the Wes Davidson High School, Lexington, North Carolina, for AML. ARN AML is a group that you and Brock have been working with monthly here lately and have a great relationship with them. Great wrestling group. They're heavily involved with WrestleCade. But they're going to be at the Wes Davidson High School. And I'm guessing Brock's going to be doing some wrestling that night on March 23rd.
Yes, he is. And opponent to be determined. It's going to be good. We're having a really good time with AML wrestling. Very professional, well-run. Got some talented guys there, and just look forward to it.
There you go. Well, guys, two quick reminders. Make sure if you haven't already, you can go out Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pre-order. Now, ARN Anderson, My Life is the Enforcer, the book I'm showing you right now if you're watching us on YouTube. By the way, make sure you check us out on YouTube and subscribe to the channel. Turn on those notifications, and that's where you get to see all ARN's amazing facials as we talk about his past and have some fun on this show each and every week. But yes, I have a copy of the book here with me. It's great. Lots of great feedback. ARN has copies of this book with him as well if you're going to see him at the shows and at the Comic-Cons. But he'd be happy to autograph. Talk about a collector's item. Now ARN has something new to autograph for you as fans. So if you don't have one, make sure you go out and grab it. We're seeing amazing reviews that are coming back on social media. So I wanted to touch on that. ARN, anything you want to say on that before I talk about our stores?
Just I'm proud of it. And a lot of people have asked over the years, when you're going to do another book? And I didn't really want to do an autobiography as much as I wanted to do something entertaining. And this is like a co-op of an autobiography and a comic book. And most people are saying it's a one-read deal. They sit down, yeah, they get started, and they read all the way through it. And has some feel-good moments, and we make some superheroes out of some people that deserve it.
Buddy, it's simple, it's clean, it's great pictures, it's a page-turner, and it's a great story. I can't put it over enough. And you're absolutely right. All the feedback that I'm hearing from my friends as well, saying they just sat down and read it. I mean, come on. The red TV title. Are you kidding me? Look at that. Beautiful. The artwork in this is gorgeous. And not only that, the guy wearing it. I mean, look at that guy. Jack.
Right.
Head of hair. Come on. ARN. I mean, come on. This is one that I know you're keeping everywhere around the house. And you're probably saying, see this guy right here? Yeah, that's me. Yeah. ARN Anderson.
Yeah.
It's hard to be proud of, buddy.
That's a hard sell, but
It's a hard sell. Well, I'll tell you what isn't a hard sell is the book, and you're going to want to get it and read it and check it out and make sure it's a part of your, as an Arn Anderson fan, it's got to be part of your collection. The other thing I want to mention is boxofgimmicks.com. That's where you're going to find all kinds of awesome merch, including all the Horseman merchandise. This is embroidery, ladies and gentlemen. If you're watching on YouTube, you can check it out fully embroidered, just like the jacket and the hat behind me, and all of Arn's t-shirts, great merchandise. And I've told it, said it before, JD Hoop is working on, and I would expect it to be soon. We still have our several months away from July when we will be recognizing Arn at the Hall of Fame. And there is going to be a new Hall of Fame shirt and sweatshirt available as well. Lots of great stuff. So keep your eyes open, your ears open as well for new merch arrivals to the Arn store and the Four Horsemen shop, boxofgimmicks.com. With all the shilling out of the way, Arn, let's get into it, because we're here to talk about September 1994. And last week we talked about the Clash of the Champions, all the events surrounding what went down in the oatmeal capital of the world, Cedar Rapids, we think. We think that's where he smelled the oatmeal, but we had a good time with that. But at the Clash, Hogan was attacked by a masked assailant that wasn't Arn Anderson. Flair won their rematch by countout. You and the rest of the stud stable beat down Dustin Rhodes, while Meng took out the John Wayne of professional wrestling, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. I had so much fun reading his promo last week. This week, and it was fire, wasn't it?
Powerful. And it's something that lasts a lifetime.
You go back. It's so good. It stands to this day.
Play that, you know, get 25 live audiences of all age and demographics and play that promo for them and get their reaction. Oh. They'll all be breathless.
If you're a wrestler, go back and listen to those, that promo, and you can take notes.
Go to school.
Yeah, talk about, you know, just being able to pluck some gold and figure out how to structure a promo and tell a story. That's storytelling 101, Dusty Rhodes style. This week, we're going to discuss the fallout of everything that happened in Cedar Rapids on our way to Fall Brawl, headlined by the match you and Dusty help make famous. That's right, it's the War Game. So we're going to dig right into it. Here we go. And following the Clash of Champions, Arn, WCW would travel overseas for another European tour, putting on matches in Switzerland, England, and Germany. Most of the major players made the tour, but Arn, you, Dustin, Dusty, and the rest of the stud stable, not on tour. Do you have any recollection? I know we're talking 30 years ago, so I say this, you know, tongue-in-cheek, grinning here. Why you and those men in that storyline specifically were not on that European tour?
I probably was not the best candidate for overseas tours at that particular point in time because of history, recent history.
Understood.
And that was the angle that I was involved in. So if I didn't go, the angle didn't go.
There you go. Enough said on that one, and that's just like how we do it. Ask Arn almost anything, and that's where we have the word almost, but that makes a lot of sense when it comes to some things that have happened in the past. But even though you're not in Europe for this one, Arn, I do want to discuss a couple things that took place during this whole 12-day venture for the company. First, thanks to Ricky Steamboat's injury that we talked about last week, Steve Austin works every single night of this tour with Sting, because Ricky's hurt, he's out. We know that Austin's going to grow unhappy with his positioning in the company over the next 6 months or so. But here in September of 94, he's positioned with the franchise of the company. How big of a spot was it really for anyone to be in a position to be able to work with Sting like this on consecutive nights overseas? To me, it feels like a major opportunity for Austin to show what he's capable of with, to be able to work with a guy like Sting.
It's as good as it gets.
Yeah.
Doesn't get any better than that. That was a upgrade for damn sure.
The other thing that's kind of going on here, and we've started to really kind of talk through this as we've talked about the transition to Hogan and Bischoff and the transition of WCW, right? They're going from more of a wrestling-centric product to an entertainment-centric presentation. Did you and Sting or Steve Austin, any of you guys that are WCW guys, did you talk about this transition at all with, you know, wrestlers such as, hey, where do we fit in with this new direction of the company? I think about guys like you and Austin. Do you ever remember having those conversations?
Again, not, you know, I was glad to be where I was. You know, I'm just, I've already been there and I've already done that. And if they want to bring some showbiz into our lives, whatever the remaining time on my contract was, I was set. And that governed every thought that I had during that time.
The bottom line is you just didn't get caught up in any of this overthinking it bullshit.
No, I was a wrestler. I would go wrestle. You have to have those. You can't have everybody be showbiz. You have to have a blend. My spot was boots, tights, tape around wrists.
That's right.
Go wrestle for 15 minutes.
And because the balance of this, the counterbalance of this is that you guys are also hearing ratings were through the roof for the Clash. Buys for the pay-per-views are through the roof. So, like, are you really going to sit around and be upset, you know?
Not at all. Not at all.
Right. It's financial security.
That would be foolish. Hey, the business is picking up and you're not happy. What's the matter with you?
Yeah. Figure it out. This is where we're going to make money, dummy, you know, yeah, kind of thing. Yeah,
absolutely.
The other thing to note about this European tour before we put a bow on it, Arn, is that all 12 stops main evented by Hulk and Flair. Here's how their matches ended. Despite what happened in the U.S. and the story that's going on with Flair and Hogan, Flair loses every single match to Hogan. Big boot, leg drop, three count. Every single match, all 12 matches overseas. What do you think about that? Flair losing clean in Europe. Does it matter that all these matches end by pinfall? Does it hurt Flair at all? I mean, what do you think about that in Europe?
Well, you probably won't be coming back there for years. He should have won with his finish. Exactly what happened.
He's the build. That's the guy you're building around now.
He's your John Wayne.
Yeah.
You know,
and he's the cash cow that's making all the numbers go up.
And you have a leg drop, 1, 2, 3, that those people, those houses, I imagine were pretty good.
I'm sure.
And you give them a clear winner and a clear loser. I agree 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's put Hogan over. My God, look at our numbers. And now we're overseas. They get to see Hogan. Hogan's worldwide. Hogan's international, baby.
That's right.
Let's send them home happy, as they say.
Correct. So.
Well, after returning from Europe, they put on Fall Brawl. It takes place September 18th, 1994, 2 days before your birthday in 94, the day of my birthday in 94. I would have, 17 would have been. Roanoke, Virginia, 6,500 fans attend the event. 5,200 of these fans were paid. The gate for the event was $61,000. Let's break this down a little bit. Beginning with the last match of Cactus Jack. And during our July coverage, I mentioned that Cactus had become increasingly frustrated, Arn, with WCW and his position with the company. He and Kevin Sullivan lose their tag titles at Bash at the Beach. And then they lost the subsequent rematch as well. Of course, Cactus and Sullivan blamed each other for the loss, leading to this loser leaves town match at this pay-per-view. This match only goes 6 minutes and 8 seconds. Even though Cactus had turned heel in the weeks leading up to the event, the fans in Roanoke cheered the man from Truth or Consequences, and Sullivan actually got the heel reaction despite being positioned as the babyface. Arn, fans aren't stupid. Yes, Kevin Sullivan, the devil himself, was supposed to be the good guy in this one. Cactus took a bunch of signature bumps, including one where Sullivan body slammed him in the middle rope from the middle rope to the concrete floor. The finish comes when Cactus charged Kevin, who moved, and Cactus hit Dave Sullivan, which allowed Kevin Sullivan to get the win with a roll-up. Cactus never returns to WCW. He goes to Japan, ECW, and eventually Mick Foley goes to WWE, where he enjoys most of his success. He becomes a 3-time world champion. We've talked about how Cactus would not have necessarily fit within the company led by Hulk Hogan at this point. So you got to say, probably Cactus leaving here was probably the best decision he ever made for his career, wouldn't you say?
Ballsy move, but he knew what he brought to the table, and sometimes you have to bet on yourself.
Not only did Cactus bet on himself, Arn, but just 6 or 7 months later, Steve Austin follows suit, leaves the company for ECW and then WWF. And Simon C. wants to know, he said, I know Mr. Anderson respects Mick Foley as a human being, but does Arn think the risk that Cactus Jack took with his own body had an overall detrimental impact to the wrestling industry?
No, but I think he beat his body up to a degree that, and the first time, you know, that I witnessed him taking these bumps and off the apron to the floor on his back and all that stuff, I went up to him and I said, it's a famous conversation. I said, Jesus Christ, Cacti, you ain't got no sense. He said, no, Mr. Anderson, I don't have any money.
Oh my God.
That says it all, don't it?
Yeah. And for him, the ability to make the most money was doing what he was doing to his body.
He had dug out a ditch that nobody could follow. It would have killed anybody else to take the bumps. I mean, if you take a bump from the apron to the cement floor, there's a pretty good chance you're going to break your back.
Oh, yeah.
Break your neck, break your back, knock your hip out, whatever it may be. I couldn't have took that bump. And he was willing to do that because he saw a niche where he could create his own, whatever word I'm looking for.
Yeah, he created his own brand, his own style.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yep, and he was willing to beat his body up to do it.
Here's a guy that I'm about to talk about next that didn't do moves like that. But we just said his career ended because of a back issue. Ricky Steamboat. He has to come out to the ring, Arn, and announce that he can't defend his U.S. championship anymore. How's this for a transition? We talk about a guy that went on to do this and make millions doing it to a guy who had made decent money, big baby face, and now at this point in his career, he has to come out and announce, basically, I can't wrestle anymore. Here's my United States championship. Nick Bockwinkel then awards the U.S. title to Steve Austin. Bockwinkel told Austin he had to defend the title that night. His surprise opponent, Hacksaw, Jim Duggan. He was signed to the company back in July, but makes his surprise pay-per-view debut. Duggan defeats Steve Austin for the U.S. title in less than 40 seconds. Okay. Oh man. Okay. Yes. The guy who would go on to be Stone Cold. A couple things about this. First, Duggan is a longtime veteran who worked for Bill Watts and the WWF before coming to WCW. So he definitely has a great track record. I remember watching him in Mid-South. He's certainly a Hogan guy. So he followed suit when Hogan left the WWF in 93. And I'm not sure we've really discussed Duggan on the show, but when did you first meet Jim Duggan?
When I was in working for Watts,
okay.
When I very first started, 82, he was a big rugged guy, double tough.
What did you think about his transition from that double tough rugged guy, the brawler in the Watts territory, to then his character during his run with Vince McMahon? Was it just no big surprise? That's what Vince does with guys type reaction.
Well, if you go back and watch his matches from when he was a heel and for Bill Watts and a babyface for WWF, he did all the same moves.
Yeah.
Nothing changed. He just did it to the bad guys.
He carried himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Did it surprise you when Duggan signed with WCW after Hogan joined the company, or not really? Like, you saw more of an influx of guys starting to come in.
Yeah. It started to be one of those planes passing in the air switching companies. There was a lot of that going on. It didn't seem like a big deal.
What I guess I don't understand here. Austin working matches with Sting on the European tour. and then they book him to lose in 40 seconds to Jim Duggan. It's a head scratcher for me.
Were there any, we don't have the information on if there were any returns after that.
He had been the U.S. champion at this point, Arn, for 10 months, having won the title at the 1993 Starrcade event. And, you know, fans have asked the question, what would have been the harm in actually giving him a match here? You know, what does a quick win do for a debuting, you know, Jim Duggan? Why not give Austin the match he deserved? These are some of the questions that fans have asked, you know, over the years about this quick transition of, hey, let's bring Duggan in and just have Steve job out to him in 40 seconds. You know, just doesn't make sense.
That in hindsight, which we always Monday morning quarterback, sure, we like to think we're brilliant. What about a 20-minute match with Dustin Rhodes there?
I mean, come on. That's a home run. That would have been a big-time match.
Yeah, and you wouldn't even have had to switch the title.
Now, I know Dustin's going to end up being in this War Games match, but still, you can start to figure out some booking scenarios to make all this work, right?
He got a won by DQ.
Yeah.
Austin kept the title.
Yeah. The next highlight of the show, Arn, we'll keep moving. Triangle match. Listen to, I don't know if you probably don't remember how triangle match worked. It's Vader, the Guardian Angel, who we talked about was the former Big Boss Man. Remember when they couldn't do the boss anymore because they were told that was too close to his WWF character. So now he's the Guardian Angel. And Sting, to determine the number one contender for the WCW heavyweight title, the Hulk Hogan belt, right? So in WCW, a triangle match was not a triple threat match, but it was a match where three opponents wrestled in two matches as determined by coin flip. Vader lost the coin toss and had to wrestle the Guardian Angel first, and he defeated him in 7 minutes and 4 seconds, okay? So those two face off, Vader wins. The two wrestled back and forth until Vader knocked down the referee from behind with a clothesline. The Guardian Angel pinned Vader with the sidewalk slam, but Nick Patrick was still down, so he doesn't see it. Harley Race headbutts the Guardian Angel to break up the pin, and Vader hits the Vader bomb. Vader wins. Guardian Angel, sorry, bud, you're done. Following that win, Vader then wrestles Sting, this is the triangle match, in a match that went 23 minutes and 18 seconds. The winner was apparently going to face Hogan down the road. The thought was at Starrcade. The two wrestled to the first 15-minute time limit. Then they exhausted the 5-minute overtime period. The second overtime period was sudden death rules where the first man forced to leave his feet lost the match. I love the layers of this. The Guardian Angel comes out to get Race out of the way. This once again distracts Nick Patrick. While he's dealing with Race and the Guardian Angel, the masked man that attacked Hogan hits Sting in the leg, which allowed an already down Vader to stand up and win the match. So it's very messy. It's a complicated way, in my mind, to get Vader as the number one contender. But for much of the year, he's worked the upper mid card against Ray Traylor. And Vader here in my mind, Arn, he's still able to go. He's wrestling over 30-minute matches here against two very good opponents. Any surprises that at some point WCW was going to set up a Hulk and Vader match? Because to me, other than Ric Flair, there isn't really more of a natural opponent in WCW for Hulk Hogan than Vader.
I don't like that triangle match.
Yeah, I don't either.
Period. So let's just... It's hard to comment on that. My comment is, I don't like it. I think it's confusing, cluttered. Man. First guy to go off his feet.
How about Vader and Hogan? Would you have loved to seen some Vader Hogan, a big storyline between Vader and Hogan for a while?
Sure.
Yeah.
It would have forced Hogan outside of his comfort zone to have to turn it on and turn it up. But I've seen some stuff of Hogan and in Japan. I don't know if you've ever seen any of those clips. He's a different guy over there.
Unbelievable wrestler in Japan.
He works like a regular guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but he's still like Hulk Hogan. Worker. I was very, very shocked to see that. So if he could have had that kind of match with Vader,
WCW,
sign me up.
I use the word messy to describe the creative earlier. I love you. Like, I don't even want to talk about that shit. As a recap, Flair and Hogan are going to wrestle Halloween Havoc in the rubber match between those two. Vader just becomes the number one contender. The masked man that attacked Hogan attacks Sting here as well. There is just this confusion, lack of direction. There's a lot going on here. I just feel like it seems like it's just difficult to make the transition with weeks of televisions already in the can. And so there's a lot of moving places. Hulk and Flair did not wrestle on the car, but instead we saw a long segment that was supposedly live via satellite, but in all actuality was taped a few weeks earlier and wound up being a phone conversation with Flair and Hogan. And according to Meltzer, they had to cut the arena mics during the segment because the fans were rabidly cheering Flair and booing Hogan. So they cut the mic so it wouldn't come through on TV. Basically, Hogan and Flair set up their third match that would be the main event for Halloween Havoc. The match would not only be for the world title currently, which is, by the way, since in case anybody's lost because there's so much going on here, Hogan's the champ.
I am.
Yeah, Hogan's the champ, but possessed by a suspended Flair, Hogan also agreed to put his career on the line. So now Hogan just came into this company. We already have a stipulation a few months in where he's putting his career on the line in a title match. By the time we get to Joe Louis Arena on October 23rd of 94, the world title, the careers of both men are on the line, and the match is going to take place in a steel cage. We'll get into that next week. Okay, bud, how's that sound?
Yeah, I can't take it today. Too much.
They got a cage, a title, a career on the line. There's so much window dressing here, and this is only the third time they've ever met.
He just got there and he's putting his career on the line.
What are we doing?
Hot shotting. That's what you're doing.
The main event of Fall Brawl. Let's get into that. It's War Games, and it's between the Stud Stable and Dusty's team. This match lasts about 20 minutes. During the build of the match, Colonel Parker assumed Ming would be the fourth man in the match. And Ming had been increasingly involved in all the action for the past several weeks, Arn. But the WCW Executive Committee ordered Parker to wrestle in the match instead of Ming. They said, Colonel Robert Parker, you and your white suit are jumping in War Games. Our fans, listen, they need to do themselves a favor and go watch the segment on Saturday Night Wrestling where Mean Gene breaks the news to Colonel Robert Parker. It is absolutely hilarious. And you all sold the announcement like Bockwinkel just canceled Christmas. So there goes the ace in the hole for the Stud Stable, who will be represented by Arn Anderson, Bunkhouse Bunk, Terry Funk, and Colonel Robert Parker in the War Games. On the other side, you got Dusty, Dustin, and the Nasty Boys. You're just shaking your head like this is going to be a shit show. AA, you and Dustin start the War Games match, because why not? During the glory days of the Horsemen, it's always Dusty and AA starting War Games. So right. You got to have a Rhodes and an Anderson.
So it did not build or do justice to the War Games name.
Great action. You and Dustin, you have a great first 5 minutes. If you're interested in going back and watch it, just watch the first 5 minutes. But there's also one part that you have to pay attention to. I'm going to get to. Heels win the coin toss and enjoyed the man advantage for the duration of the match. The War Games began when Dusty entered last. And after a couple minutes of action, Dusty locked in the figure four leg lock on Colonel Parker. And the Nasty Boys dropped elbows until Parker finally surrendered. They're just dropping elbows on him until Parker taps out. Our fans have some questions to you about this one. On first, Dow Kennedy says, you and Dusty were the opening opponents for countless War Games matches. What was the chemistry that made you two such good dance partners in that double ring cage?
He was over. Big time over. And I knew my job was to get in there and for 5 minutes get my ass kicked. That's why it worked.
And you sold for a guy that was over and the fans ate it up.
100%.
Yeah. A wrestling historian with this one. Why wasn't Haku or Ming in the War Games match? Thanks in advance. Buddy, WCW committee said,
Didn't he hear what you just said?
I think he thinks there must have been something else behind the scenes going on, but I think they just wanted to make some, have some fun with the booking and have Parker in there, make him the weak link
and get a clean win and not have to beat the other heels.
Yep. Adam Krasnoff with the question we all want to know: when the WWE released the War Games DVD, Dusty revealed that Colonel Robert Parker crapped his pants in the War Games match. After the match is over, Parker remains seated on the canvas until the broadcast goes off the air. Heenan even mentioned in commentary that the Colonel had an accident. What was the conversation like with Rob as it happened? And when the camera stopped rolling, it had to be awkward.
I was probably not in the area code. I don't know.
Arn, the title of this episode is No White Pants in War Games.
Yeah.
September 1994.
That's a good title for the, and a good, good way to go. No white, no whites.
No white pants in War Games matches.
Nope.
Oh, so good, Andrew Hermes. About the event, Meltzer wrote the following: pay-per-view numbers aren't in, but nobody expects it to do any better than about half of what Bash at the Beach did. I'd give the show a slight thumbs down. None of the matches were bad. If you forget about Duggan and Austin, yeah, those 40 seconds. But only one match, Sting versus Vader, was that good. War Games was the second worst one I've ever seen, although far superior to last year's fiasco. I love them. And the lack of blood isn't the reason, as much of the work rate and talent in the ring wasn't comparable to years past events. Overall, I wouldn't call it bad, but after it was over, I can't say it was worth anywhere near the $24.95. Oh my God, I would die for a pay-per-view to be $24.95 nowadays.
No juice.
Yeah, no juice in a War Games. Don't work, buddy.
There's your mistake. That's the glaring one right there. And it was just a hodgepodge, teams thrown together.
Yeah.
Babyface team. I mean, there was no history with Dusty and the Nasty Boys, was there?
Dustin and the Nasty Boys? That, to your point, hodgepodge.
That's it.
Yeah. We'll close the show down talking about the Halloween Havoc press conference, Arn, because the following day they have it. It's Detroit. It's the city where Halloween Havoc is going to take place. And at the press conference, the company announced that, here's the entertainment, Mr. T would be the special guest referee for the career versus career cage match. And additionally, now this one's kind of cool. This will pop you. Muhammad Ali, arguably the greatest boxer the sport had ever seen, was going to be on hand for the event. And we're going to talk about this event next week in more detail. But Double A, before we talk about actual numbers, in your opinion, how impactful was it for WCW to have Muhammad Ali on hand and be able to use him from a marketing perspective and everything else for an event like this? I mean, this is a pretty big deal for WCW.
You think?
Huge.
I was a schoolgirl. I was so giddy.
Yeah.
There's a few people in the sports world that I've met over the years that just, you look at them and Muhammad Ali had an aura around him that was just, you couldn't see it, but you could feel it. And he was just a special man. And you got that. There was this, aura is the only word I could come up with. And I was thrilled and looking forward to hopefully getting a handshake and a picture with him.
You still have, you have a, what, an autograph? Is it a boxing glove?
I have a boxing glove and a picture of him signing something for me. Probably the boxing glove. And so the cool boxing glove at home was one of those things I treasure.
Very nice. Let's talk about the press conference. Meltzer reports the following: WCW held a press conference on September 19th in Detroit to announce the pay-per-view featuring Muhammad Ali, Hogan, Flair, Jimmy Hart, and Mr. T. It got carried on several newscasts. I mean, here it is. This is what they want because of Ali, and resulted in a $40,000 first day, which is the biggest first day sale for WCW in years. During the week, negotiations had broken down with Mr. T over money, and they were going to drop the special ref gimmick, but the deal was put back together by the end of the week, and it may include him working the Clash in November as well. You've worked with a lot of celebrities, Arn, and during your career, did it shock you to find out that negotiations between WCW and Mr. T broke down or not necessarily. You know, these are things that happen when you're dealing with, you know, big time stars like this.
Above my pay grade.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way out of out of bounds for my concerns.
$40,000 first day ticket sales, huge number. You got to think, man, Ali, he's got to be drawing a lot of interest. You think this is all him or a combination of all the stuff being put together?
I think Ali drew that house. Certainly not Mr. T.
Do you, Drew Landry wants to know, what do you make of press conferences for pay-per-views? Do you find them helpful for the event and for the business?
If nobody gets in a fight.
You like hands-off press conferences.
If they have conversations and some insulting and
tension.
Get tension. Because once you get in a fight, it just becomes wrestling.
Yeah. Hey, they didn't. Yeah, I'm with you. Brad Stanton says, do you think a wrestling worked press conference is different from any other one, boxing, MMA, et cetera, or is all of that stuff an act?
I think it's all a work.
Yeah.
I mean, they steal from
us. There's no tickets, buddy.
They jazz it up. You know, the minute you stand up and start barking at somebody, it becomes wrestling.
Right. Yeah, it's to me, you're absolutely right, because they know it goes back to what? Talking them in the building.
That's it. Tension, but don't go over the line. Once you go over the line and then just two security guards break it up, how bad could those two guys be if two security guards break it up?
Arn, we're going to talk a little bit here as we close the show about a guy that you and I have talked about, and I have the honor of working with him behind the paywall on ad-free shows, and that's Kevin Sullivan. And I mentioned that the major events that happened during the month in September is that he began turning heel following the Fall Brawl event. The turn begins on September 25th, episode of Main Event. It's a live broadcast. Dave Sullivan defeated Ric Flair with Sherry Martel. It was a DQ, 1:07. Flair choked Sullivan with his robe. Sherry interferes. But after the contest, Flair went to apply the figure four on Sullivan, only for Hogan to make the save. Moments later, the masked man ran out with Brother Brudeye shoving the masked man off the top rope, clearing him from ringside. Hogan and Jimmy Hart then celebrate in the ring with Dave Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan then appears ringside and yells at his brother to leave the ring. Hogan intervened, with Kevin saying he had waited 10 years to face Hulk Hogan, and Hogan wouldn't stop him from teaching his brother a lesson. Gene Okerlund then spoke with Kevin and Hogan as the show ended, with Hogan telling Kevin that Dave was a Hulkamaniac and didn't need you anymore, Kevin. And most of our listeners know this is the booking that eventually, Arn, leads to the creation of the Dungeon of Doom. And we're going to discuss that entity in detail in the coming weeks. But talk to us about the decision to make Kevin Sullivan the booker. Is this something that Hogan was involved with that you know of? We know Flair hated the job. He didn't want to have anything to be a booker. But you've worked with Kevin, known Kevin for a long time. How did what was that decision like? And was Kevin really excited about becoming booker for WCW?
Well, everybody that was in the company at that time, he probably had the most experience booking, would think. You know, he had Florida and what other places.
Yes.
And Kevin is a brilliant guy. He's a brilliant guy. Very smart. Details, things of that nature. Heat. All those things that are important to know as a booker. And matching guys up who have good chemistry. All those things Kevin had. I mean, if you look at the lineup, who else would it have been? Because he was helping Rick, and then Rick left, and that kind of left Kevin, who was helping Rick, and he just kind of, he was the vice president and moved up into the presidency, I guess.
Yeah, and to your point, Kevin had exposure and time working in Florida. If you haven't checked out Tuesdays with the Taskmaster, it's an ad-free show's bonus show that we do every Monday. But Kevin, you can tell. They throw questions at him. Our listeners throw questions at him. Booking ideas, even on current product. He's 73 years old, Arn, still throwing out ideas how he would book things. He's incredible.
He's a brilliant guy.
Brendan Foley, he said, listen, I am a huge Arn Anderson Show fan. Can you discuss what Kevin Sullivan brought to WCW as both a wrestler as well as a booker, which you just did? Mostly you were talking about what he brought to the table. Where do you rank Sullivan among all-time heels? Thanks to you and Paul for a great podcast. Brendan, thank you so much for contributing. But where do you rank Kevin in terms of just overall as a heel and what he was able to accomplish as a booker?
I don't really know how to answer. How do you rate him? Kevin was always a heel to me. He was never a babyface.
Yeah.
And if he was supposed to be a babyface, he beat the crap out of the heels, you know, and he did it in a rough way. Kevin was always, I never looked at him being a babyface. He was always a heel to me, and the way his work was perceived. And I think just his overall knowledge of sports, period. He took some stuff from sports and plugged it into wrestling. You know what I mean? They would figure out a way to worm it in where it made sense. And just being that smart on all other areas of sports and things, it gave him other avenues to pull from, which, you know, was just smart.
He is. He's a brilliant man. Dylan says, is Kevin Sullivan a top three booker of all time? Also, when are you and him going to sit down and do a podcast together? Thanks, fellas. We're going to do something. The three of us are going to get together this year. I don't know the date, but the three of us are going to get to do some recording. No doubt about it, Dylan. But would you say he's a top three booker of all time, or would you say he's one of the top bookers that you've been around in the business, Arn?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't work for... I mean, there are people that say Bill Watts, when he had his territory, was a great booker. Dusty, you have to say, is maybe top booker. You know, Pat Patterson gets a lot of votes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if Kevin's in that top three or whatever.
Top five, probably, but, you know, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, Mike Graham's dad.
Eddie Graham, and that's the one who Kevin was the understudy of Eddie Graham.
And Dusty, apparently.
And Dusty, that's
they
true.
They all learn from here, they so you got to put him up there.
Yeah.
I think Ron Fuller was a good booker. Bob Armstrong, good booker, you know.
Yeah, a lot of territory guys that you just – the Memphis, what they were doing, the Jerry Jarrett and that whole crew down there. And I mean, you know,
which I'm not privy to because I never worked there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Some of us didn't get to watch some of that stuff. I didn't get to watch Florida, Arn, just because of where I lived. It wasn't on TV.
Me either.
Yeah.
Me either.
Yeah. So it's hard, like you said, when it comes to having to rank top three or five guys when you truly haven't even been exposed to probably everybody that has done it.
You know, it was a blessing on one hand that I didn't have to work for all the companies, because I would go somewhere and I would get to stay for a long time, you know, and that was a blessing. But I didn't get to see the Tennessee stuff and all
that. I didn't get to see the Portland stuff.
Portland. I was fixing to say Portland.
Yeah.
And that, you know, Texas, Devon Erichs. I don't know. You know, they say.
I got to watch some of that, but not as much as the other. Yeah.
Who was the booker there? You know, David Manning.
David Manning, Fritz together.
You know, you got to – can't make an honest decision and rank those guys unless you've worked for them, I don't think.
Yeah, good point. Well, Arn, listen, that concludes our coverage of September 94. And I want to ask you a question from Bobby, KF5GTX, before we close this one down. He wants your opinion on adding pay-per-views at this time in WCW. Did the potential income justify the fixed expense of running additional events? And were more personnel required to run more major events, production? Did Turner Corporate assist with this sort of thing, since Turner was indeed a television company? So, Arn, you and I have talked about the last few weeks, business is booming. So, justifiably, I guess it makes sense for them to start adding more pay-per-views and shows, right?
At this moment in time, it looks like it's building and climbing, right?
Right.
Be foolish not to stick with it and try to get some more nectar out of the grape.
squeeze those grapes, baby, and get all that juice that you can from the squeeze. Arn, this has been a blast talking to you all things September 1994. Don't forget about some of the things we mentioned at the top of the show, the comic as well as the merch. I want to remind you that if your business targets that 25 to 54-year-old demographic, there's no better place than to advertise with us here on advertisewitharn.com. And you can find out more about advertising with The Arn Show. Arn and I would be happy to advertise your business or service, so check it out. We've worked with some of the same people for years and years, and we want to start establish a relationship with you. It's advertisewitharn.com. Arn, next week, we continue. Wow, my voice really cracked there. We continue to walk through your career. It's Halloween Havoc 1994, headlined by Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair. We got a cage. We got a career versus career. We have Mr. T. We have Muhammad Ali. We find out who the masked man behind the lead pipe attacks is. Arn, you and Dustin wrestle in a grudge match. The Nasty Boys take on Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck. And we see the creation of the three phases of fear. Join us next week to hear all about it. Arn, thank you for doing this with me this week.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, my man.
You got it, sir. On behalf of the Enforcer, Arn Anderson, the Hall of Famer, this is Paul Bromwell, and we'll see you right here back next week on another episode of Arn